Katie and Vincent, it is finally fantastic to meet you both in person. Heard a lot about the brand, heard a lot about what you want to do with the brand. So why don't you walk us through kind of the inspiration to take the leap of faith and jump into the deep end of wine production. You have a little bit of a history in that.
Yes, I do. Nice to meet you, by the way. Thanks so much for wanting to do this. Okay, there's a fly. I'm getting attacked.
Don't worry. You can just start over again.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you want me to start over?
Sorry.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So just start.
Yep, you can just...
My great-great-grandfather immigrated here in 1857, and he moved to Napa in 1866 and started a winery, had 10 children. He was very successful during his time in business. And in 1919, his sons had shut down the business because of Prohibition. Mm-hmm. And I remember being super young at my family's home, you know, growing up and seeing all of these old logos and old wine labels and pictures, photographs. And I just felt so inspired by it and thought, I couldn't believe that nobody had tried to revive this, the legacy.
So the brand, basically from a wine production standpoint, ceased around 1919.
Yes, that's correct.
And then, so to your point, several generations later, you are sitting around going, why has no one decided to resurrect this?
Yes, way before drinking age as well. So I was not drinking alcohol yet. So well,
not legally.
Well, no, because I was like 12, so I wasn't doing that yet then either. But I was really inspired to bring it back to life in some way. And at that time, I didn't know what that looked like. I mean, you know, it made sense. Obviously, the wine would be the vessel to bring it back to life. But I just thought if I could put this out back in the public's eye and try to just have the name and the logo and have people see it again and know the story, because it has such a deep-rooted history in Napa and it's such a part of Napa's story. So years later, I managed, you know, I always knew I needed a winemaker, and so I managed to find somebody to partner up with me and become the winemaker, and we relaunched the brand in 2019, so 100 years later.
Incredible, and I think it's, you hit it right on the head. Having the vision is one thing, but then you have to execute on the vision, and then you need a winemaker, and the winemaker has to have a specific pedigree, and they're not a dime a dozen that have your knowledge, Vincent. So how did you find Vincent? And then Vincent, you've worked with Kirk Venge, who's kind of a nice name in the valley to have. Tell me a little bit about taking her vision and manifesting that to the vineyard sources and then bringing it all together.
Well, when I first heard Katie's story, for me, that was the hard sell. And all it was finding out that this legacy that we all know exists here in the valley. And you see visitors come through and you hear tasting room professionals sometimes have this misguided idea that we only started making good wine at the judgment of 76.
Right.
And, you know, I grew up in this valley in St. Helena. I was in Boy Scouts with Kirk. His dad actually came on my first 50 miler, Nils Venge. And I had no idea that these guys were winemakers. They were just part of the fiber of this place that made it work. And you grew up working in vineyards and bottling lines. And when I made my way back to the valley, after some time living abroad, I knew that I was gonna make wine, and working with Kirk has been great for that, because he really just has this blueprint of Napa Valley, the Sonoma Coast, this part of the world that's in his mind, and you know, the 100 different little sites that we work, and getting to be his harvest sampler my first year, and then getting to make wines that I now make in our portfolio that fell out of his portfolio, and vice versa,
right,
for that matter. So we've had this really nice relationship where I've got shepherded into sort of the larger, I'll say, sort of horizontal story of this place. And then Katie came along, and suddenly there was this vertical element that was just incredible, where, you know, my year studying in France, you know, all you ever heard about was the classification of the Grand Crus in 1855.
Yep.
And here Katie is telling a story that starts 11 years later in 1866. And you've got a guy that, you know, 100 years before the Judgment of Paris, before Mondavi was the Mondavi of this really gilded age of Napa Valley, where I mean, he was Napa's first millionaire. He was Napa Valley's first patent holder for a cork pulling apparatus that the Napa Valley Museum has in its archives to this day. And California's largest wine producer. He was exporting wine to Europe at a time when, like, right. like we have a hard time exporting wine to right. Europe right now. And right. he was doing it by the barrel out of Galveston.
So I'm curious, you needed a winemaker because you had this vision and romance in your head that you wanted to get into the bottle. You saw this project. Who was interviewing who, really?
Oh, well, that happened over alcohol, because I was of drinking age. We were in Tahoe. We met, we have a mutual friend that's whom I work with and is very close with both of us, grew up with Vincent. And we were both invited on this weekend trip to Tahoe. And he started talking about, Vincent started talking about his bar in Oakland. Very much, history is very important to him, mm-hmm. preserving this place. I just loved the story of the bar, and I thought, huh. And he has his own, you know, he makes wine. He's just returned home from being abroad. I feel like this is a person who might want to know my story, and I would love to share it with him just to get his feedback on the historical part of it.
Sure. There's some serendipity here that might as yeah. well take advantage of it.
So I shared it with him. There was an article actually that had been in the Napa Register in 2015. We met in 2016 and shared it with him, and he thought it was just very interesting. So
awesome.
That's how it started.
I remember the moment reading that article and just the, it's like a slot machine going off in my head of, you know, just the wealth of heritage that was
yes.
just built into this already.
Right.
And to get to go tell a story with wine that's way more interesting than any particular vintage or plot of terroir, that this thing sort of tied all of that together in a way that made all of this more meaningful. Yeah.
And so talk to me, us, a little bit about the portfolio. Obviously, you're paying respects to the heritage. Mm-hmm. So there's Sangiovese, but where are you today? And then where do you want to be in 5 years?
So right now we have a Sangiovese, a Vermentino, mm-hmm. and a Rosato. And mm-hmm. we wanted to stick, yes, true to the story, just with the initial couple of releases, Italian varietals. And we have some ideas in the works, and we have some things that are, I wouldn't say brewing, but...
some fantastic wines.
Yes, yes,
right.
yes.
We're going to get into the... We have a Cabernet that... I started making out of a vineyard that was another family friend of mine. We have Sauv Blanc in process. So that more typical Napa profile for today's Napa is coming, and it's going to be fantastic.
Well, and the thing we've always said for years is everything starts in the vineyard. And so when you have access to someone who knows the vineyard sources, that is 80% of the battle.
Absolutely, yeah. yes.
And then if I learned anything from Kirk and you've learned more, then you just have to get out of the way.
And that's what I told Katie that this morning.
Good. And what is the overall case production?
Currently, we have, with all three, about 250 cases.
Okay. And then where do you see yourself when it's no longer a passion romantic project and then it becomes work? What level of case production? Not that it's not work now.
That's a good question. So I would like it to grow. I don't want it to grow. You know, the point of this wasn't... I would have never set out to, you know, start making wine or have a winery or have a wine brand. There are so many great wineries and wines in the Valley, but I think that the history is really what compelled me to do it in telling the story. So the growth of it, I would like the company to grow. I would like the case production to grow. We have grown a little bit every year, mm-hmm. Which it's funny that it's only 250 at this point, but still it's a slow start, and I don't want it to grow to something that's not special
right.
and not meaningful
and not fun.
True.
Cuz it's a lot of fun making five barrel lots. You get to really pay attention to what's going on with each wine. Small block vineyards where you know, we've picked our own grapes in these vineyards. We did pruning. We brought in friends, and when you can have that touch on a wine, and keep it sort of close to you, we have ideas for some other you know, I'm calling it the Big Mig, which is, it's going to have, Milyovka means miles of cows, not okay. thousands of cows, miles of cows. But we had this idea for sort of a super Tuscan. So take our Sangiovese, beef it up with some Petite Syrah and some Napa Cab, and put it in a 1 liter bottle with a big heifer on it, and just call it the Big Mig. Because a super Tuscan is one of her favorite wines, and eventually we just have to start making sort of the thing that you want to pull out on a Tuesday night for your friends. We love our Sangiovese. Our Vermentino is a crowd favorite. The rosé is sort of true to the approach I had taken with rosé, like professionalizing it some years before with another brand I have called Ambrosé. But the Cab and the Sauv Blanc are going to be on point for Napa, we hope.
Right.
And then... and then, you know, the portfolio of wines down the road will also be true to the history of Giacomo, because it wasn't a monoculture back in the late 1800s. He was producing wine, and not just from Napa, from all over the state. He was bringing in Zins and Rieslings and Albarinos and Tintacows and a whole sort of zoo of varieties that have been grown out of this valley. And it's interesting to me to sort of pull some of those back in and offer people a take of what wine might have tasted like in California 100 years ago.
Well, we are honored that you chose to pursue this romantic dream at the age of 12 and see it to reality at the age of 21, because if this is any judge of what's to come, we're all in for a very, very special treat. So thanks so much
for sharing. Thank you so much.
Cheers.
Thank you. Cheers.